You're listening to Ask a Black Doctor, Friday Facts About COVID-19 featuring Dr. Bukasi Dubé. Join us every Friday at 8 a.m. and 2 p.m. for a half an hour as we discuss issues surrounding the current pandemic, vaccines and distribution, dispel myths, provide facts, and address concerns. We'll also be providing updates about COVID-19 vaccines and discuss how we can build a better culture around Black health. Episodes will be available wherever you listen to podcasts, so head on over to thenumbers.fm for the link to the show. Now let's jump into it.
I'd like to thank you all for tuning in to Ask a Black Doctor. DJ Ambush here with Dr. Bukasi Dubé. It's our last episode of the year. This year went really quick. We are right here in the holiday season. I felt like Thanksgiving was 2 weeks ago. how you doing over there, Doc?
Man, Thanksgiving 2 weeks ago, I feel like, you know, Labor Day was 2 weeks ago.
Right. Definitely.
Yeah. Man. I'm doing well. Just been busy with a lot of things happening in life and just trying to keep one foot in front of the other.
I know that's right.
Yeah. How have you been doing?
I've been good, man. I've been having some very, very interesting discussions as part of the cancer podcast series that we're having that we're knocking out with OHSU. So I've been, you know, knee deep in that and having those conversations, editing some of our older episodes. And then, you know, with everything happening throughout the holiday season, you're out and about and, you know, always being careful of making sure I got a mask on, cleaning surfaces. It seems like now with flu and RSV out there, like, I'm even more cautious than I was just over COVID. But dealt with a cough for a couple of weeks, you know. But Dr. Evans would be happy to know I do have my flu shot. And I am all the way caught up on my booster. So, yeah.
That's good news. I'm happy to hear that that you got your boosters and you got your flu shot. I'll be sure to report that to Dr. Evans when I talk to him later on today.
Please do. But we have a guest on this episode. Would you go ahead and introduce our guest?
Well, today we have the honor and pleasure of hanging out with Dr. Seidlinger. He's the state epidemiologist, and he's actually, I'd say, probably the most significant clinician to lead us through this pandemic. And it's been an honor and a pleasure to work with him. I worked with him for a little bit while I was with the OHA, but Dr. Seidlinger, Dean, good to see you, man. How are you doing?
Good to see you, Dr. Dubé, and thanks for the introduction. I don't know if I deserve it, but I'll try to live up to that. I will say, I just want to say in the introduction, you said it felt like, you know, this year has gone by so quick. I will say at times it feels like that. Other times I feel like it's been 10 years since New Year's. So I think it depends on my mood, but yeah, it was quick, slow, all at the same time.
Yep, 10 COVID years, right?
Definitely. So I started out a little bit earlier talking about, you know, getting all caught up on my vaccine series. It was very interesting. There was an event that I went to, I want to say a month ago, and they had a clinic on site. And it was an evening event. It was like in a nightclub. And they had a clinic on site, and they were offering COVID boosters, flu shots, and monkeypox. And I was like, whoa. This is right. I was like, this is amazing. Everything goes in this left arm. Let's just do it. Let's get it over with. So I was very, very happy to be able to, you know, see that out and happening in the community. There has been a lot of conversation around RSV, bronchitis, pneumonia, flu. Is this our normal flu season? We just haven't had one in a while because they're, you know, for the most part, we've been all in our little hidey holes and in our silos away from each other. Like, what is happening?
Yeah, I can start with that one. One, I'm glad you got to attend that event and that we made it convenient. I think we're still trying to get vaccines out to where people are. And if we can't do that, we try to get out to where people are and make sure that we have ways to get them to someone that they trust who can give them their vaccine. And so, you know, we've been at this a while and tried a lot of things. And certainly we know the closer we can get it to where people already are, the better off we are to get people to listen to us, get their questions answered, and hopefully get their shot. But, you know, to talk about flu, you know, this isn't a normal flu season. So we were very spoiled the last couple of years with very little flu, very little RSV or respiratory syncytial virus. And as you stated, that's because we were, you know, taking drastic steps to limit our contact with others. Whenever we were out, we were wearing masks. And so that helped us prevent a lot of COVID infections, but it prevented a lot of flu and a lot of RSV. But even if we take those last 2 years out of it, this flu season is already different. Every flu season is. This would be what would be considered on the more severe side. So a lot more flu than we see in a typical average year. But what's even more unusual is that it happened earlier. Usually it's at the start of the year when we start talking about seeing more flu cases and flu cases going up pretty dramatically. But we saw this, before the Thanksgiving holiday, that we started seeing this along with RSV. So the how high it went and how early it started is certainly different. We are happy that flu appears to be kind of on a plateau. So not going up as fast as it did, but really not coming down that much yet. But we had hoped that in the next few weeks, we'll see flu cases come down. But that doesn't mean we're out of the woods. We often see a peak of flu that comes on later in the flu season caused by a different strain of the virus. And so we'll be prepared for that. But having your flu shot on board is the best protection you have for yourself and those around you, because it'll help you stay healthy and help make sure you don't get those around you sick. So good on that. But this, like I said, yeah, this is an unusual flu year, even if we take the last 2 years out.
I just want to give a massive shout out to the event that you went to. I mean, to have those three vaccines readily available for people and giving them out to folks, that's amazing. That's public health right there at its best. And kudos to the folks that got all the shots, right?
Yeah.
And just to add on to what Dr. Seidlinger was saying, the projections that we've seen so far is that the flu and RSV are actually causing significantly more problems than COVID early on this month. And that's, most people don't think about the flu causing a lot of problems, but having been a hospitalist for 10 or so years, I can tell you that we saw a lot of elderly folks coming into the hospital who were hospitalized for with the flu, who were dying because of the flu. And so we still have to be mindful that this is still happening, and we still have to remember to do all those things that we've been talking about, right? Putting on our masks, staying at home when you're sick, practicing good physical distancing, avoiding large crowds. Stay home if you're sick.
Right, right. Is there any particular reason why this flu season started earlier? Do we have any indications to why that happened?
I think it's a really foolish person who tries to predict the flu or explain everything that happened.
Gotcha.
I will start with that, and now I will go on and maybe be foolish. But we do think that some role was played by the fact that the last 2 years, there was very little circulating flu. You know, by staying home, by wearing our masks and changing our behavior, we really limited the way flu spread. Our flu shot numbers aren't quite where we wish they were. So there's a few less people with flu shots this year than we had been seeing before the pandemic. So that could play into it as well. But I think, you know, that this is probably a real impact of COVID and our behavior change during COVID. That's not to say we shouldn't have done what we did, because we, you know, prevented, you know, thousands of people from getting sick and being hospitalized and dying from those measures. And we can, you know, prevent those same infections now through less drastic measures. That flu shot and that COVID booster really help. But just putting that mask back on, you know, dusting it off where we may have, you know, not been wearing it as much lately when we're going out and going to be inside with a lot of other people, you know, that makes some sense. That's going to help keep us healthy and the loved ones we return home to healthy. So, you know, some of us, you know, didn't really stop wearing our masks as much. But for those who did, now's a good time to put it back on when you go out to these crowded indoor places.
there's been a lot of talk about folks seeing, you know, the Omicron variant spreading significantly, and people beginning to question whether or not masks work and whether vaccines work. And you're seeing a lot of the fatigue that we've been talking about for a while. Mm-hmm. But I think all three of us can say this loudly, right? That all those preventative measures that we've been talking about, the vaccines, the masks, are still very effective, not just in protecting ourselves, but in protecting those that are around us. Those that may be immunocompromised may actually end up getting sicker and ending needing hospitalization or possibly dying from being infected with the flu or RSV or even COVID-19.
Yeah. There has been a large number of hospitalizations, particularly in children. Is this something that I just didn't pay attention to in previous years? Has the flu always hit kids worse? Or is there something particular or specific that's happening this year that is affecting children, something within the strain?
You know, I think for flu, it's always been true that flu hits our youngest folks, so young kids, and the oldest folks, so our seniors and grandparents and older relatives, the hardest. That's also true for RSV. RSV is a virus. It's not new, but you're right. We haven't been talking about it on the news every year. As a pediatrician, I know that every respiratory viral season, every winter, there's going to be an upsurge in cases of RSV. It causes lung infections in the youngest kids. They have trouble breathing. Most kids do great at home. We tell parents, how to make sure their kids are eating, give them medicine for their fever, how to clean out their nose so that they can breathe better. But then a small number of kids get admitted. But most of those kids, get better and go home. So we see a strain on the hospitals for a short period of time, but not enough that we've really talked about it a lot. Mm-hmm. But right now, our hospitals are, 3 years into dealing with COVID-19. The staff are getting sick with COVID-19, with flu, with RSV. Their kids are getting sick and they're staying home to take care of them. And all three of these viruses hit at once. So we don't usually see that where the flu cases peak same time as RSV cases peak, just as, another wave of COVID-19 infections are going up. So I think that's why you're hearing about it a lot more this year. Not necessarily because the viruses are very different, though we'll continue to study that, but just because they hit all at once. And they hit at a time when our healthcare providers, the doctors, the nurses, the respiratory therapists, the secretaries, the people who deliver the food and clean the rooms, they're all tired. They're exhausted. We're all exhausted, but they've been, caring for folks for a long time. And so, that has definitely taken a toll. And that's why we talked about, kids being hit, because it got to a point where our children's hospitals were having trouble, caring for all the patients who showed up and parents were waiting with their kids in the emergency department a lot longer. They may not have gotten transferred up to a specialty children's hospital as quick as they wanted. That has thankfully slowed down. RSV cases are going down. Flu cases in kids, we're still seeing some admissions, but not at a high level. But now we're seeing the adults come into the hospital. And so that's why our hospitals are still really strained and why we're still out here talking about the fact that we all need to take care of ourselves and take care of the loved ones around us, because, we want to make sure that when we show up at the hospital, someone's there to take care of us, and that, we get the care that we deserve, and that we're not waiting, for hours or even sometimes half a day or more to get that care because so many people are sick.
I always love hearing the inside baseball, this inside perspective of what you guys are going through in the medical community. I remember there being an emphasis on how tired you guys were the first couple of years of COVID. And once the world kind of opened back up, I feel like a lot of us forgot, so to combine that with the normal flu season and, like you said, RSV popping up on the back of a community that has been actively fighting COVID going into the third year, that makes a lot of sense. It makes so much more sense. And when people are tired and they're exhausted, it does affect their immune system. So, wow. Thank you for pulling that all together. That makes a lot of sense. Really, really does.
And we've also seen a whole bunch of folks leave the medical community, right? because they're so tired, because they've been working so hard. So it's all those things combined with the great resignation that we just saw this last couple of years. It's has not been a good time to be at the forefront in healthcare.
Very good point. So we're dealing with COVID, we're dealing with flu, we're dealing with RSV. Now, what are the key differences between the flu and RSV? It feels like, you know, to me anyways, there are a lot of overlapping symptoms. And I don't know what I have when I have it. You know, I know I can test for COVID and the test comes up negative. Okay, I might possibly have the flu. I might possibly have RSV. I think I definitely experienced RSV those couple of weeks when the cough was just taking me out, but I didn't experience any fever or nausea. So immediately I'm like, well, this doesn't feel like a flu. It must be RSV. But again, this is me going off of my Instagram degree. I have no idea what I'm talking about. But are there some key differences between and distinctions between RSV and flu that we would be able to, you know, suss out?
There are some differences, but as you stated, there's a lot of overlap. So I'll start with some ones that are fairly easy. So, you know, loss of taste or smell is something we talked about with COVID-19. And if you suddenly lose your ability to taste or smell, that's probably COVID-19 because other viruses don't typically cause that. As far as, you know, sore throat, we see that with COVID-19. We see it with flu. We see it with the common cold, but not usually with RSV. Things like COVID-19 and the flu both cause like headache and us not to feel really hungry. And we don't see that as much with RSV. Upper respiratory, kind of really a lot of congestion, sneezing and coughing. You know, we can see it with all of them, but we see it more with colds and RSV, a little bit less with the flu and not as often with COVID-19. So, you know, again, so if you have some of those key symptoms, you can't taste, you can't smell, probably COVID. Get tested, call your provider if you're at risk for complications so you can get tested and possibly get treated. If you have a headache and you're not feeling really hungry, you know, it's probably COVID-19 or the flu. If you're a, you know, healthy young adult without any medical conditions, you may just kind of wait it out at home and, you know, drink a lot of fluids and, you know, see if you can convince a friend or a relative to bring you some food, you know, to help take care of you. But you may not need to get care. But if you're, you know, have, you know, lung disease, you have asthma, you have diabetes, you're older, you're a parent of a young kid, you know, call your provider, call your doctor and say, hey, I've got these symptoms, and they'll see about getting you tested for COVID-19, maybe. They'll say that really sounds like the flu. They may treat you, you know, after talking to you or seeing you. But it kind of all depends. But it, yeah, there is a lot of overlap, but there's a few things that can help us suss it out, like the loss of taste or smell, you know, the sore throat, which happens in some but not others. But yeah, we are seeing a lot of symptoms come together. And I think we all either ourselves or know someone who's suffered through one or more of these in the last month.
As far as treatment, though, for the most part, it's all the same. Are there any specific symptoms that we should be aware of that if it hits a certain degree, we should go to the hospital? Or for the most part, should we be trying some over-the-counter remedies and just staying away from people?
So I'll say that in terms of treatment, we do have Tamiflu for the flu. And it works best if you give it really early on in the course of the illness. Okay. Same thing with COVID-19. We have some oral regimens like Paxlovid, which has been used a lot. And those work really well. We do have other therapies that are typically given in a clinic setting via IV. So we do have other therapies, but for the most part, if your symptoms, like Dr. Seidlinger was describing, if your symptoms don't require you to go to the hospital, you're right, DJ Ambush, that you can, all of that can be taken care of at home in a very similar manner. Stay hydrated, you know, take something to lower your fever, make sure you're getting something to eat, make sure taking the rest that you need, if you need to rest, make sure you're getting the rest that you need if you need to rest. So, but I don't remember the question now.
Oh, let me remind you, and I'll start with kids, Dr. Dubey, and you can do something around adults. So, you know, what should you be looking for? What should you be worried about? So I want to reassure parents that most kids, if they get RSV or the flu or COVID-19, are going to do well. They're going to be sick. They might be real unhappy and grumpy for a few days, but most recover. But the kind of symptoms that I would want parents to look for to say, hey, like, let me call my doctor or let me bring my child in, is if your child is breathing really fast, and this is particularly true in younger kids, or if they're having trouble breathing. And by that, I mean that you see their nose flare. So their nostrils go in and out when they breathe. They're grunting, making kind of grunting noises when they breathe, or they're wheezing. Those are signs that your child may need to be seen. If you ever see any bluish tint around their lips, around their face, if you lift up their shirt and you can see their ribs pull in like that, you know, the ribs stick out because the tissue in between, the muscles in between suck in every time they take a breath. Those are signs that they're working hard to breathe. And so I would call their doctor or bring them in to be seen. Certainly, if, you know, they have severe muscle pain, which we call myalgias, but muscle pains, and they can't walk at all. If they're not able to drink anything, they're refusing to either take their bottle or breastfeed if they're really young, use their sippy cup. You haven't seen them urinate, have a wet diaper, or go to the bathroom themselves in, you know, several hours. Those are signs that they would need to be seen. Or you're a parent, if they're just not interacting with you the way they normally do, if you're having trouble waking them up, or they seem especially sleepy and groggy, even when they're out of bed, those are signs that they should probably be seen. So, you know, most kids are going to do great, but those are some signs for parents to look for to kind of take their kids into the doctor. And since kids are more my forte and adults are more Dr. Dubey's forte, I'm going to turn it over to him to talk about some of the things maybe adults should look for where they may want to go in to see their doctor.
Thank you for that. So for adults, it's actually very, very similar symptoms. So most adults can speak for themselves. They can advocate for themselves. If you're having a difficult time breathing, if you're having a difficult time staying awake, having seizure-like activities, then please, by all means, go to the hospital. It is not a good idea to stay at home because you may not make it. For those that are taking care of elderly folks, right, they may not be as communicative as people younger than 70. So when you see your elderly parents or your elderly relatives or friends and neighbors having a difficult time with the same things, staying awake or having a difficult time breathing, you know, blue lips and things like that, make sure you take them to the hospital. Make sure you get them the care that they need immediately, because it could really make a difference when you take them in. And how quickly you take them in. So just pay attention to those things and make sure that your loved ones are well taken care of.
Do either of you have any encouraging words for members of our community that think, you know, hey, this will just blow over. I can just stick it out, make some lemon tea or, you know, have some ginger. Is there any words that you can give to have people take this a little bit more seriously? I know a lot of our guards have gone down because we've gotten used to COVID. But, you know, the flu does its damage every single year. And the fact that we're having a pretty active season right now, I think, you know, any encouragement that you could give to help people, you know, really, really take this more seriously and actually, whether it's staying home or go seek help, will be really, really great.
Well, I will say, you know, what we're asking people to do is really for now, for these next few weeks, you know, as we get through January, this is not a forever thing. You know, we do know a lot more about RSV and influenza. We know that we typically see increases in them seasonally during the winter months. And while flu may have, you know, two peaks in a winter, and we may not be able to tell you how high that peak is going to be before the winter, what I can say is that we seem to be seeing the signs that this peak, if it flu or influenza, seems to be at its top and we think it's going to start coming down in the next few weeks. We seem to have already passed that peak for RSV. Doesn't mean it won't come back, but we don't typically see it come back anytime really soon. We don't know as much about kind of seasonality and patterns for COVID-19, but we do know that every time we've seen an increase, we see a decrease as well. So we're still in that increase for COVID-19, but it's coming at a time when RSV has already started coming down and we think flu is going to come down. So if you've had your bivalent booster, your new booster shot sometime in the last couple months, you've got the best protection against COVID-19. If you've had your flu shot this year, you've got your best protection against flu. If you haven't, it's not too late. Those will still offer you protection as we go through the rest of the winter. But that mask that, you know, none of us love to wear will protect us very well against all of these diseases. COVID-19, particularly Omicron, is very contagious, very easy to get. And if we all remember, all of us know someone or got COVID-19 ourselves probably since Omicron came around, many people more than once. But that mask is still cutting down that number of cases, believe it or not. And if some people, you know, hadn't been wearing their mask regularly, we would have seen even more. But it does an even better job against protecting us against flu and RSV, which aren't as contagious. So while we're asking you to pull that mask back out, you know, we're not asking you to wear it forever. We're saying, hey, for these next few weeks, as we get through January, consider keeping that mask handy so that when you're in an indoor place, we're not asking you to get multiple flu shots or multiple COVID shots. You know, I think it's just those two shots, one for each disease that we're asking you to get us through the winter. And it, we're starting to see signs it's getting better. I have nothing against lemon and ginger tea. That makes you feel great. And if you got a sore throat, you're congested, you know, having a good, you know, cup of hot tea, a good mug of hot tea, particularly with ginger in it, more ginger than lemon, I think, you know, that's going to help you feel better as you sit at home. And like I said, if you can convince friends and family to bring you some food and help you if you do get sick, that's going to make it even better.
Excellent. Dr. Dubé, a little bit earlier, you mentioned the Great Resignation, and there was a conversation, moments in the conversation we talked about, you know, members of the medical community leaving. Is there anything happening right now? Is there any way that OHA is responding to the to that stress?
That's a very good question. So earlier on this month, we saw Governor Brown issue a new executive order that extended her previous executive orders right from back in November, essentially allowing for folks, medical folks who are outside the state to come into our state and help out at different hospitals. And I can tell you that there are multiple institutions that have benefited from this. I have friends in essentially at every health system here in the state, and they have all benefited from these staff, that medical staff that are coming from other states, be it physicians, be it nurse practitioners, PAs, nurses especially. So that effort from the governor and from OHA has made a very, very big difference.
Yeah, and I think really directly as well, in addition to trying to make it easier for someone from out of state to practice and take care of Oregonians and folks in the hospital here in Oregon, you know, we've utilized contracts that most hospitals have, but, you know, the state also has some on a larger basis to try and bring in nurses and respiratory therapists and other providers to help care for patients in the hospitals right now. And we think that, you know, by the second week of January, we should have about 470 additional healthcare staff in hospitals helping to take care of patients. And that's going to help make sure that the nurses and the respiratory therapists and everyone else who's been working so hard to, you know, care for us when we're sick, to care for our loved ones and keep us informed, we'll be able to have those days off and continue to come back and care for patients by bringing in these additional folks. And that's a cost split between the state and the hospitals who will help pay for that additional staff. You know, it happens every year when you know, flu season hits, that hospitals have to bring in more folks. It's just been a lot more needed this year because the peaks of the diseases all came at the same time, at a time when staffing levels were already down. And so that's why we all pitched in together, from Governor Brown's executive order down to actions that Oregon Health Authority and our local public health partners have taken, and our healthcare system partners have taken. It's been a great collaborative effort in the meetings where people come together and figure out, how can we share resources to best care for everyone who shows up, who needs care, has been, heartwarming to me. So at a time of tragedy, when we see people getting sick and dying, which is horrible, to see just the dedication that our healthcare providers, our public health folks have taken in coming together to continue to give what they need to do to try and keep us healthy. And that, that warms my heart every time I see it, Oregonians coming together like that.
Yeah, all hands on deck. That's a great response and reaction to the strain being placed on the medical community here. That's very good news. Very good news to hear.
So we have seen other states do away with masking requirements, especially even in healthcare settings. Yet Oregon has not gone that way, and there's been a lot of questions from folks who are coming in from other states and seeing us do things the way we do things. Dr. Seidlinger, could you speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, I think, we don't have requirements that we wear masks in most places in Oregon, but in healthcare settings, so the hospital and a clinic, in skilled nursing facilities and other facilities, we still require people wear masks in those settings. And that's for a couple of reasons. One, people who are sick, people who have COVID, and now the flu and RSV come to those places more, so the exposure is higher. We know that people who are most likely to have complications from getting sick with one of those viruses, people who are immunocompromised because they're being treated for cancer, people who have diabetes, people who have lung disease or heart disease, also come to those settings for care. Mm-hmm. And we all deserve to kind of get care in the safest way possible. So we've continued to require that healthcare providers and staff, patients and visitors in these settings wear masks. And I think that's helping us to keep, more people on the job by keeping them healthy. It doesn't mean that people aren't exposed outside of work or that there aren't times when there might be exposures at work, but masks have really helped to keep our workforce healthy and more importantly, to keep patients healthy when they seek care. We don't think that we'll be wearing masks. We know we won't be wearing masks forever in healthcare settings, but we need to get through this current surge of respiratory diseases and really then come up with a plan for how we're gonna kind of roll back those requirements as we move, from winter into spring. As Dr. Dubay said, most states have already done away with those masking requirements, but our neighbors to the north in Washington, to the south in California, here and several other states have kept those mask requirements for healthcare providers. And I do think it's helping us through the surge. Otherwise, we might be talking about even more dire circumstances in our hospital. So this has really helped.
True that.
Yeah, I am a big fan of the masks. Big fan. Well, thank you both so much. Again, like I said in the beginning episode, I think this is a great way to end the year. And we say it every chance we get to our listeners. Please make sure you share this with as many people as possible. Listen to it as many times as you need to get your to make sure you're well informed in these conversations. And we're doing as much as we can to make sure the most helpful information is out there, as opposed to a lot of the disinformation and confusion and panic that may be out there misinforming our people. So thank you both again, and we will catch you guys in the next episode.
Thank you.
Peace. Thank you very much. Happy New Year, everyone.
Happy New Year.
Thanks for tuning in to Ask a Black Doctor, airing every Friday at 8 a.m. and 2 p.m. right here on The Numbers. If you missed it, you can find the link to the full episodes on our website at thenumbers.fm. You can also subscribe to the podcast on all streaming platforms. Be sure to rate and leave a comment. If you have questions you'd like answered on future episodes, you can submit them through our website or the link in our bio on Instagram and Twitter.